The Caribbean was never meant to be a lawn. Before the ships arrived, these islands were dense, vertical jungles. They were tangled webs of mahogany, cedar, and greenheart that held the mountains together. The soil was thick and black. It was a self-sustaining engine of life that had hummed for millions of years. Then came the hunger for sweetness. In the 1700s, the forest was not seen as a miracle. It was seen as an obstacle. The planter saw a tree and saw only a barrier to a cane field. We are living in the wreckage of that vision. The exhaustion we feel today is not just in our bones, it is in the ground beneath our feet. The dirt has been worked until it has nothing left to give. This is the story of how we traded our biological inheritance for a crop that never loved the soil back. This is the history of the Great Stripping. Chapter 1. The Great Stripping. The sound of the 1700s was the sound of the axe. It was a constant, rhythmic violence against the landscape. On islands like Barbados and Antigua, the transformation happened with a speed that defied logic. In less than 30 years, forests that had stood since the dawn of time were leveled. The trees did not just fall, they were erased. The mahogany and the teak were dragged to the coasts to build the very ships that would carry away the sugar. What remained was burned. The smoke from these fires hung over the islands for decades. It was the smell of a world ending. We look at our islands today and see rolling hills of green. But we are looking at a scar. Our ancestors saw the original face of the land disappear in a single generation. The sugarcane is a demanding guest. It is a grass that grows tall and fast, but it eats the earth to do it. It requires total sunlight. This meant every canopy tree had to go. When the trees fell, the wind arrived. Without the forest to break the Atlantic gales, the topsoil began to move. This was the first sign of the collapse. The rain, once a blessing that filtered through leaves, became a weapon. It hit the naked earth and washed the nutrients into the sea. The planters noticed the yields dropping as early as 1750. Their response was not to rest the land. Their response was to work it harder. They introduced the planter's clock. This was a system of absolute efficiency, where every square inch of accessible earth was forced into production. There was no room for fallow ground. There was no room for the forest to breathe. The exhaustion of the soil mirrored the exhaustion of the people forced to work it. The land was being bled dry. In the mountain regions of Jamaica and Saint Domingue, the slope of the land made the erosion even more brutal. Deep gullies formed where none had existed before. The rivers began to run brown with the lifeblood of the islands. This was not a slow process. It was an ecological heart attack. By the mid-1700s, the miracle of Caribbean sugar was already cannibalizing itself. The planters were moving higher and higher up the hillsides because the valley floors were already spent. They were chasing the last of the black dirt. This was a war of extraction. The sugar mill was a machine that required wood to boil the juice. Even the trees that weren't cleared for fields were cut down to feed the fires of the boiling houses. An average plantation could consume hundreds of acres of woodland just to process one season's crop. The islands were being stripped inside and out. The heat on the ground increased because the shade was gone. The springs began to dry up because the roots were no longer there to hold the water. The very climate of the islands began to shift. It became harsher. It became drier. The lush paradise was being cooked into a dust bowl. We must understand that this was a choice. It was a business model applied to biology. The investors in London and Paris did not care about the stability of the soil in 1770. They cared about the weight of the hogshead barrels arriving at the docks. They treated the Caribbean like a mine, not a farm. You take what you want until the hole is empty, and then you move on. But you cannot move on when the mine is your home. The ecology of our region was sacrificed for a commodity that provided no nutrition to the people who grew it. We became a region that produced what we did not consume and consumed what we did not produce. By the end of the century, the landscape was unrecognizable. The endemic parrots and the giant lizards had nowhere to hide. The silence in the areas where the forest used to be was a new kind of haunting. The soil was no longer a living thing. It was a medium for a chemical process. It was tired. It was grey. It was dying. And yet, the pressure to produce never wavered. The empire demanded more. The soil screamed. But the masters only heard the sound of the coins. The hills were now bald, staring at a sun that was once filtered by a billion leaves. The stage was set for a disaster that would last centuries. The rain was coming, and there was nothing left to hold the earth in place. Chapter 2. The Invasive Shift. As the 1800s dawned, the Caribbean landscape was a broken machine. The soil was so thin in parts of the Lesser Antilles that the cane would barely stand upright. The solution was not to let the land recover. The solution was more intervention. This era marked the beginning of the chemical and biological invasion. The planters began to import bird droppings, known as guano, by the ton from islands off the coast of Peru. They were trying to manufacture fertility. They were pumping the earth full of foreign nutrients to keep the sugar coming. It was a temporary fix for a permanent wound. The land was on life support. Then came the rats. The shipping industry had brought more than just trade. It brought the European black rat. Without the original forests and the snakes that lived in them, the rats exploded in number. They ate the cane. They ate the stores. They bit the workers. The ecosystem was so out of balance that the rats became a plague. In 1872, a man named W.B. Espiu decided to play God. He imported 9 mongooses from India to Jamaica. He thought he was bringing a savior. He was bringing a ghost that would haunt our wildlife forever. The mongoose did exactly what a predator does. It looked for the easiest meal. It found that the rats lived in the trees or in the cane. But the Caribbean's endemic birds and reptiles lived on the ground. Within a few decades, the mongoose had spread across almost every island. They didn't just kill the rats, they wiped out species that had existed for millions of years. The ground-nesting parrots, the unique skinks, and the non-venomous snakes were slaughtered. We traded our biodiversity for a failed pest control experiment. The mongoose became a permanent part of our landscape. A reminder of what happens when you try to fix a broken environment with more interference. By the late 1800s, the soil exhaustion reached a breaking point. The transition from slavery to a supposedly free labor system didn't change the demands on the earth. If anything, the pressure increased. Small farmers, many of them formerly enslaved, were pushed onto the worst land. They were given the steep, rocky hillsides that the sugar estates didn't want. To survive, they had to clear the last remaining patches of forest. This led to a second wave of erosion. The very people who had been broken by the system were now forced to break the last of the land just to eat. The exhaustion was now total. It was in the chemistry of the dirt and the spirit of the people. The islands were no longer the vibrant, diverse ecosystems of the pre-colonial era. They were simplified. They were monocultures. If the sugar price dropped, the whole region starved. If a hurricane hit, the soil washed away because there were no deep roots to stop it. We were trapped in a cycle of environmental poverty. The land had been worked for 200 years without a break. It was a marathon run at a sprint, and the runner was collapsing. Even as the sugar industry began to wane in the early 1900s, the damage was done. The forests didn't just grow back. The soil was too acidic, too thin, and too depleted. In its place came invasive scrub and grasses. The landscape had been downgraded. We weren't just losing trees. We were losing the memory of what the islands were supposed to look like. The connection between the people and the bounty of the earth was being severed. We were becoming dependent on the outside world for the very thing we used to have in abundance, the ability to feed ourselves from a healthy earth. As the world moved toward the mid-20th century, a new shadow appeared. The exhaustion of the plantation was about to meet the demands of the modern world. The sugar fields were beginning to be sold off, but they weren't being returned to the forest. They were being prepared for something even more permanent. The concrete was coming. The islands were about to be paved over, and the last of the mangroves were standing in the way of a new kind of sugar, the tourist dollar. The land was about to be asked to give one more thing it didn't have left. Chapter 3. The Ghost of the Plantation. Today, the exhaustion of the Caribbean is visible from the air. You can see the brown plumes of silt, where the rivers meet the sea. That is our history washing away. We call it coastal development, but it is the final act of the stripping. The mangroves, those twisted trees that live in salt water, are the last line of defense. They are the kidneys of the island. They filter the runoff and protect the coast from the sea. but in the 1980s and 90s, we began to rip them out. We wanted white sand beaches and clear views for hotels. We repeated the mistake of the 1700s. We saw a barrier where we should have seen a shield. When the mangroves are gone, the ocean comes in. Without the reefs, which are being choked by the silt from our exhausted hills, the waves hit the land with full force. The hotels that were built on the edge of the water are now finding that the water wants its space back. We are spending millions of dollars to build seawalls, trying to fight the Atlantic with concrete. It is a losing battle. We are fighting the consequences of 300 years of environmental mismanagement. The land is too tired to hold itself together against the rising tide. The ghost of the plantation lives in our supermarkets. Because our soil was worked to death for sugar, we now import more than 80% of our food. We live in a tropical paradise, where it is cheaper to buy a tin of tomatoes from Europe than to grow them in our own backyard. The nutrients are gone. To grow anything now requires massive amounts of chemical fertilizers. These chemicals then wash off the exhausted slopes and into the sea, killing the coral reefs. It is a circle of destruction. The exhaustion of the land has created a permanent state of economic vulnerability. We must look at the climate crisis not as a new threat, but as an acceleration of an old one. The hurricanes are getting stronger, but our islands are getting weaker. A Category 5 storm in 1700 hit a wall of dense primary forest. Today, it hits a bald hillside and a concrete town. The landslides that bury our communities are the direct result of the trees we cut down for the sugar boilers 2 centuries ago. We are paying the interest on a debt we didn't sign for. The environment is not a separate thing from our history. It is the ledger where all our choices are written. There is a quiet exhaustion in the rural communities. The small farmers still struggle with the same thin soil and the same unpredictable rains. They are the keepers of a dying tradition. They know the land is spent. They see the springs that used to run year-round, now reduced to a trickle. The water table is dropping, because the hills can no longer soak up the rain. We are thirsty on islands, surrounded by water. This is the ultimate irony of the Caribbean collapse. We transformed our home into a machine for someone else's profit, and now the machine has seized up. The final line of this story is not yet written, but the ink is fading. We are at a point where restoration is no longer a luxury. It is a matter of survival. We have to find a way to put the soul back into the soil. We have to replant the forests we lost and protect the mangroves we have left. If we don't, the islands will continue to shrink. The exhaustion will become terminal. The land has given us everything it had for 3 centuries. It has been stripped, burned, poisoned, and paved. It is asking for a rest that we are not yet prepared to give. The sugar is gone, but the collapse remains. The hills are silent, the birds are rare, and the sea is rising. We stand on a shore that is moving backward. The weight of the past is not just in the history books. It is in the very dust that blows off the hills and into the ocean, leaving us with nothing but the rocks.